and welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist.
How are you, Stephen?
Oh, man, everything's going great, and things are going particularly great in Bearland, where the Baylor Bears have risen to the highest ranking in school history at number 2 in both the coaches and the AP polls.
It's a landmark event. Of course, they're coming off a very, I guess you could call it a business-like performance at Kansas last week. And, of course, the reason why they moved up was because TCU really struggled at Kansas State later on that Saturday. I guess we're starting to see the pollsters kind of use this week to week where now they're really starting to use style points when it comes to evaluating teams and why they're moving them even though they win. So because they're winning, they're not winning impressively enough. And TCU paid for that the other day, even though they had to go on the road to win that. But, all credit to the Bears because they were very impressive. You know, the thing that was impressive about them, Stephen, was the fact that, you know, they never played with exceptional pace throughout that game against Kansas. They just kind of went out there, took care of business, and then left. And that was kind of the story there. So I thought it was a performance that I think everyone expected. They shut them down and, getting ready for West Virginia this week.
Yeah, the thing about it is that everybody knew that Kansas didn't really have a chance, and Baylor came out and very quickly proved to Kansas they didn't have a chance. And that's, there's always that risk. No, there's always that risk. If you let a team you should beat hang around, then all of a sudden they start thinking they can play with you, and sometimes bad things happen when that happens. But if you just really shut them down in the first quarter like Baylor did, then the whole thing's pretty much settled. Garrett Stidham got a lot of work in, and Laquan McGowan got another touchdown, another 18-yard touchdown, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Well, I'll interrupt you for a second. I promise you, Stephen, after looking at that play a couple of times, and then I happened to – Look at the highlights of the Cotton Bowl. I think it's the same play.
Yeah, I thought it was. I thought he was in about the same place on the field when he caught the ball, too.
Pretty much, yeah, except this time Michigan State, the difference was Kansas had a defender there, Michigan State didn't.
Yeah, but that defender was really kind of wishing he wasn't there.
Well, he was there.
Yeah, he was there, but, boy, he was. Did you see him kind of, like, do those, like, two steps each direction, trying to figure out what he was going to do.
Yeah. It was, as I called him, Twinkle Toes McGowan. And so, look, it's a play that in a game like that, that you can see Baylor using it because the game is pretty much out of hand. I doubt we'll see that ever during a game when something is on the line. Having said that, I know it was in the Cotton Bowl and all that sort of stuff. Of course, that was scored late, too, I believe, in the third quarter when Baylor thought they had control of it. And obviously, we know what happened in that one, but having said all that, I think it's he can catch. He's got pretty good hands. I still don't know what his role is going to be throughout the rest of the year with McGowan, but as far as what Baylor wants to do. But yeah, it was a nice little moment for him and for everybody else on the team to see him get a catch and a touchdown out of it.
Well, one of the things that when I talked with Seth Russell on Monday, we're going to have it on the Blitz. But one of the things that Seth Russell mentioned was how much he likes having McGowan in there as a blocking back. He said that that's really neat for him to be in there for that. But there's a lot of other stuff going on. On defense, Andrew Billings seems to keep getting better and better.
Yeah. I think what – and I made this point earlier was – you know, the thing that makes Andrew so good is his feet. Now, his upper body strength is what it is. That's been going on since he was playing varsity football at Waco High. But I really watched his feet in a few snaps, and it's just how quick with that first step off the ball and how he quickly just moves and how he can basically just, I hate to say throw the defender aside or throw the offensive lineman aside, but that's basically what he did on several occasions. And you don't even have to equate it because it was Kansas. I mean, he was doing that with Tech. He's been doing that really, Stephen, for the last couple of years. And I think that's a part of his technique that's really going to get better and better as the season goes on. Obviously, he'll get a better test this week with West Virginia. But that's the thing that I think that's really what it is that if your feet are moving like that, to, and then you complement that with your strength, it just changes everything and how people will have to guard you.
I thought that Blackshear had a better game this time. He'd been, Bo had not broken out as big as I expected him to the first couple of games of the season. This, he seems to be getting back on track now. Sean Oakman continues to be kind of a, mystery wrapped in enigma, wrapped in a taco, that sometimes he looks really good and sometimes he doesn't look that really good.
Yeah. I think in a lot of cases with Blackshear, that it's going to be important. I've made the comment, Sean Oakman can be as good as he wants to be. Stephen, the question is, he has to have the willingness and the internal drive to do it. Now, I realize in certain situations when you're going out there in the hot sun against somebody and you've got to learn how to pace yourself in a game, and, us fans and media types will sit back there and say, well, you should be going all out and that sort of thing. I mean, I can get it when you're in a situation where I get it. Like, if it's a play not coming to your side, you can pretty much just kind of ease off the throttle there a little bit. But if there are times, though, when you're really not blocking full out, and we can see it when that happens, that's when you go, really? And I don't know if this is something that's going to just be with us for the rest of the year. I probably think it's going to be. It's just something that everyone's just going to have to live with and just kind of deal with as we move along here for the balance of the season. You know, hopefully when the schedule picks up to games that are of great importance, as the enormity of the season increases, then, I think that maybe that'll mean something a little bit more, and we'll start to see his tick go up a little bit more, too.
Okay, now, Baylor's played one really good offensive team in Texas Tech. Kansas wasn't as much of a challenge. What are you seeing out of the secondary? What are you thinking on them?
I think the thing about the secondary is, number one, we've got to remind ourselves that Baylor is going to play a lot of man coverage. And when you do that, when you don't have that safety over the top that's going to help you in one way or the other, you're pretty much asking that you're kind of putting them on an island. Mm-hmm. So he's going to get beat a couple times. And that's what happens. Ryan Reed has mm-hmm. been picked on. I get it. But that's part and parcel when you don't play zone a lot of the time. When you play man, a lot of the time you're going to give up plays. And as long as we kind of understand that, then you're going to have to live with it. I think as a whole, they've played pretty decently, to be honest with you. Look, the way they shut down Tech's top receivers in Dylan Cantrell and Jakeem Grant, I thought that was pretty impressive. In Kansas's case, they gave up the one drive to open the game, and that mm-hmm. was a little bit disappointing, mm-hmm. of course. But at the same time, from then on. And credit Kansas, Ryan Willis made a couple of nice throws there too that got him into the end zone and helped them tie the game at that point as early as it was. But then they kind of took off and they kind of shut Kansas down. I think what's really been impressive to me is how well the safeties are playing between, Terrell Bird. I'll include Trevon Blanchard in there because he's that nickelback where he can kind of be that slash type of player. And of course, Chance Waz, the thing that I really liked about them mm-hmm. is their run support. I thought that was very, very impressive. If they keep playing like that, when they're going to be playing against West Virginia, who's going to be who's going to be the second best offense that they face, I think it's a secondary that's got a chance to get a lot better. And in this day and age in college football, you're just going to give up plays. You're going to give up some yards. You're going to give up some points. And I think the point is we just kind of have to remind ourselves as well is because Baylor's offense scores so darn fast that they don't give their defense a chance to get a quality rest. So when you have to get back out there, maybe you're not as juiced as you'd like to be. That's just kind of the reality of it. But I kind of like it. And as I've said, I think this team's going to win the national championship. I like all the pieces. The offensive line, the defensive line is where it starts for me. The running game is absolutely right there. It's one of those things.
Yeah, and this is something that I'm going to ever so often I've kind of had these feelings, okay? And the first, like in 2004, about halfway through the season, I'm covering the Crawford Pirates, okay? And that was the year that they won state. I started getting the same feeling Robert Griffin, his Heisman year, about halfway through the season. You know, at that point in time, Baylor was still only drawing about 20,000-25,000 people a game. And, I'm telling people, you need to go out there and watch this. This is as good a football as is being played anywhere in the country right now. I don't know. I mean, there's nothing guaranteed, but I just get a feeling about this team and this season. I think they think they're a team of destiny. And, you know, when we put those interviews up in the Blitz, these guys, it doesn't matter what you ask them about, they're coming back. We got West Virginia. We got, you know, we try to ask these questions, reporters, we've got all these different questions about all these different things. And they're like, we're thinking about West Virginia. You know, I asked Bryles about, and I don't know if you've had a chance to see Bryles Wednesday interview yet, but I asked Bryles about Shaq Linwood getting ready to break Abercrombie's record. He said, if that happens, that's great. He said, our goal this week is to get bowl eligible. That's what we want to do. This week, get bowl eligible. You know, ask Seth Russell about what he's doing. Hey, I want to get bowl eligible. Ask Corey Coleman. I want to win the next game. That's all they're talking about.
I mean, that's the way they should be doing. That's the way they should be talking about it. You know, I think the important thing is that I like the fact that Baylor still talks about the value of becoming bowl eligible. It's an important thing. When you never take for granted things that where you never forget where you came from, I guess is what I'm talking about here, is the fact that, you know, when they became bowl eligible for the first time in 2010, it was such joy and euphoria because that program at the time was looking for something to feel good about. Obviously now things have changed. Now they're looking for a national championship. They're looking for their third consecutive Big 12 championship. So when you think about things like that and where they are, you still remember that when you put stock in that, that's just the way I think that's really important to remember. And I think that's important for them to keep talking about, that wanting to become bowl eligible, because that lets you know that you're going to be playing somewhere, you know, in mid, you know, at the very latest, late December. Obviously, they don't want to be playing in late December. They want to be playing New Year's Eve. But I think you know what I mean, where I'm going with that.
Yeah, is that, you know, and one of the things, too, you know, early in the season, Bryles said, you know, happy teams get beat. It was one of the things that I was kind of noticing and how fast things changed. You know, this last week before last, Charlie Strong was on his way out of Texas. He was gone. He was awful. He was terrible. Now he's king of the world. Yeah, last week, Bob Stoops was leading the Sooners back to the promised land. They were relevant again. Now, Oklahoma's never going to be a national. It changes so fast in 1 week that you cannot take a week off. And I think that's what Baylor's really thinking about this week, is because they're really playing down the revenge thing. But they know that had they not walked out, not prepared against West Virginia last year, they'd have been in the playoffs.
I think college football is such a week-to-week thing, Stephen. It really is. And that's why I think when you look at where you have to go, you have to be so good for 12 games, basically, because the Big 12 obviously doesn't have a championship game. But you have to be so good. I realize that Kansas and Iowa State are what they are. Get all that, the FCS game against Lamar, that sort of thing. You know, I think it's one of those things where you just have to sit there and go, really? And you just have to really appreciate the process. And I think sometimes that when you have to be good for 12 straight weeks, and that's really hard. Maybe programs like traditional programs like Ohio State, Alabama, you know, programs like that, they're always in the discussion constantly. I think people just get so spoiled by it that they tend not to appreciate it. And I like the comments that Art made today about becoming bowl eligible, because this is still new for Baylor, Stephen. I mean, look, they're going for bowl eligibility for the sixth consecutive season. We've never seen that kind of era at all in Baylor football. You know, the ranking is new. the back-to-back Big 12 championships, trying to go for a three-peat. It's all so new. It's not. It's just they're still touching the apex of where they want to be year after year. And I think sometimes we're so caught up with the end result, we don't enjoy the process. And I hope for fans that as they go through this season, or maybe as they look back on previous seasons, is you really appreciate that. I realize that the Cotton Bowl against Michigan State and the year before against Central Florida in the Fiesta Bowl were really just left bitter tastes in your mouth. But think about going on the road in what was it, 2010, when Baylor won at Texas. That first time when Robert Griffin let him do a 30-22 win down there, when they won down there, can you remember the joy that everyone had? Because it happened. They won there. And then when they beat Oklahoma on the Terrence Williams touchdown reception with about, what was it, 8 seconds to go in the game or something like that? And
oh, yeah.
They win the game, their first time that they'd ever beaten Oklahoma. And things like that. The first time, you know, when they beat Oklahoma State, a couple of years ago, on that Lake Seastrunk run, where he cramped up apparently at a halfway through, and he still found a way to get to the end zone. You know, things like that, where people just have to really appreciate this is what it takes to get there. You just got to find that inner being to really enjoy the process. And I hope more people will really appreciate where they're happening, because you just never know how long it's going to last. We have no idea what's going to happen in 2016. Pretty much, I don't care. We'll worry about that once this season is over. But just enjoy the process. Enjoy the way they go out there. See how they perform against West Virginia. And if that works out, then you move on to Iowa State for homecoming the following week. And then after that, you get a week off, and you get ready for Kansas State on the 5th of November.
Yeah, and that's it's one of the things that you really have to remind yourself ever so often. You only have so many magical seasons, and this has a real possibility to be one of those. Now, West Virginia is going to come in here, and I never count my chickens, but Holgorsen is a good coach. He is especially a good offensive coach. Now, he doesn't have the tools that he had last year, some of his receivers. He does not have all of those tools, but he is excellent on offense. And this is a guy that is coaching. He has had a really rough start. Everything's starting to cave in. And those are the guys that tend to come out kind of rabid from a game. When a team with good players loses a few in a row, they come out and they want to hit somebody, and West Virginia is not going to lay down for this game. I think they're going to give Baylor the best game they're capable of giving them.
Yeah, I think the thing is that with West Virginia, I don't know what to expect from them. I mean, obviously they're going to play lights up. The thing about these three games that Baylor and West Virginia have played against each other is that no one's won in the other one's building, which is, I mean, again, we only have 3 years of it, so there's really not been a long history of winning in somebody else's building. I know that a lot of people will look back on the game last year in Morgantown and the complaints about the officials, which, by the way, I've kind of had it up to my eyeballs with the whining of the officiating about that. I'm like, we're about a year gone past that, and we're still talking about it. I'm like, you know what? They lost, okay? And it's not about the pass interference calls. It's not about all the penalty yardage. It's about not making plays to win the ball game. And they didn't make plays to win the ball game, and that's just what it is. I think the one thing about this game with West Virginia is I don't really think that Baylor has revenge on its mind as so much that it has a big goal in front of it of trying to play for a national championship, and West Virginia is just the next step. Will it be motivated for them to try and have payback on their minds? Absolutely, it will be. Are they going to talk about it publicly? Sure. But I think the one thing to keep in mind here is the Mountaineers know that they can play with Baylor. They can play with them in Morgantown. They just can't play with them in Waco. At least they haven't. I think it's going to come down for two things. It's going to come down to turnovers. The Mountaineers have committed 9 in the first two Big 12 games. And they're going to do what they can to shake up, to shake up Seth Russell, see if they can force him into making some bad throws. I don't think they've got a bad defense. I think they've got a pretty solid defensive team. You know, by comparison, what's going to be important here is they're going to have to do what Baylor wants to do. Establish the run, get after the try and control the clock. It's going to be a really hard assignment against that Baylor defensive line, but I think that's what it's going to come down to.
Okay. Now, that, I think, kind of wraps up on that part. And when we come back, I'll have Matt Clare. We'll talk a little bit about recruiting. And it's been a little quiet on the recruiting front, but we'll see what we can come up with. And then Kevin and I will kick over the Big 12 games and some of the national games. And welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm here with Rivals recruiting guru, Matt Clare. Matt, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Oh, man. Well, things couldn't be better. You know, the Bears won last week. They got looks like the recruiting class is going pretty well. And to my understanding that they have an offer for Snow College offensive tackle Garrett Bowles. Can you tell me anything about him?
I don't know a whole lot about his backstory or, you know, exactly, you know, what's going on with him currently. I know he does have a couple of visits set up, but I can tell you that Baylor wasn't alone in offering him last week. I want to say once I started following him there on social media and trying to dig up more information, it seemed like another three or four offers followed, including one from Oregon. And if you look through his offer list, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I guess big name programs on there. So we see this a lot with JUCO players, you know, in the off season. There's not a whole lot of recruiting updates, if you will. Some of them that are, you know, certainly graduating in December can take those official visits midsummer. And so you get a few updates there. But I think kids like Garrett get on the football field and put some tape out there. And certainly at 6'6", 300-plus pounds, you're going to get some attention. And he's getting that from, you know, a lot of quality programs from around the country. But I think, you know, clearly the coaches have been after a JUCO offensive lineman this entire time. And I think they're going to continue going after that. They see that as something that, you know, maybe they would like to have someone ready and available immediately to help with depth or even step in and play. So, again, you know, 6'5", 6'6", plus, 300-plus pounds, I mean, that's the M.O. For these spread offenses. They're going to do the wide spreads. They're going to pass the ball a lot, but they're going to find these athletic big men that can move around and keep up with the quick-paced offense. So that's what I've seen from him on tape, and that's what I know, very little that I know about his recruitment so far. But still trying to get a hold of Garrett and figure a few things out. Like I said, I think he has visits on deck to Auburn and Arkansas. So once I find out a little bit more about where he's originally from and, you know, maybe what ties he might have from a previous recruitment out of high school, you know, I can certainly update the board. But for right now, I mean, that's really the first offer for the Baylor coaches in quite a while. The last offer went to Michael Johnson, and he jumped on that 3 days later. So, you know, few and far between right now, but that's the latest and greatest on the offer side.
Okay, so we're kind of sitting still, and Baylor have an off week coming up for a couple of weeks. When that off week comes up, you think they'll be hitting the roads a little bit more and checking?
Well, yeah, I think so, and I think you have to look towards a few of the bigger home games as well. I think the most important thing for folks to remember is, you know, I think we say it almost every week, but the Baylor coaches are in the driver's seat, right? I mean, they have someone on social media putting out graphics about how they're the winningest team in Texas since 2011 and rated number two in the nation, you know. So they're trying to keep that top of mind for kids. And, you know, really I think what they're doing is sitting back and just trying to fill out the class with, you know, some of the best available. And I think that now the coaches can get back out on the road. So whether it's a, you know, a Thursday night game they can try and catch, or if it's somehow the team plays on Thursday or it's an off week, you're going to see the Baylor coaches out on the road watching high school football. And I just think that that'll be very telling, especially just given the situation you know, your recruiting class is pretty much intact. We've discussed a few of the areas that they would like to address, but on the whole, you're going to start to really identify some of those top targets. You know, certainly they'll go out and see some of the recruits, or excuse me, the commits, but in terms of uncommitted prospects that they go to see, I mean, I'll just say a lot about who is a priority for the coaching staff. So, you know, clearly a defensive line, possibly another linebacker. But right now, I mean, you've got to look towards the defense. I know that there's been rumblings from Kevin about the wide receiver position. But I think right now you look at Devin Duvernay as the target number one. It's been that way for a while. And you can look at another number of different options, but I just think that that's one thing I wanted to point out, that the coaches will be out and about. And, you know, for the 2016 class, I just think that'll say a lot about who they're making a priority on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, and they're sitting with, I think, obviously, like a top target shows up, okay? You know, you'll make a spot. There are certain people you'll just flatten the spot for. But other than that, now they're really getting to where they have to pick the best fit for a position that they're trying to fill, don't they?
Yeah, and I mean, if the I cover a couple different teams, right? And every coaching staff has different philosophies. And when it comes to JUCO recruiting, some schools like it, some schools don't. I think Coach Browse and his staff, regardless of high school or JUCO, have proven that they're good at evaluation. So, you know, you see it with the new offer on the offensive line. You've seen that pretty consistently in the summertime. They went after a few kids on the defensive line as well. One out of California was a Boise State transfer to JUCO. Now he's committed to TCU. You know, he missed out on that one. Had another kid come in. Maybe that's not going to happen. But I guess the point where I'm driving to here is I don't think you're done seeing junior college offers. I think that both the offensive line and the defensive line could benefit, you know. And again, these kids don't need to come and be superstars. They need to contribute. But from a depth standpoint, I mean, I referenced the offense and I referenced the pace and all that. I mean, you've got that now with you look around the conference, TCU and Tech, you know, they run something similar, and you got to stop those guys as well. And TCU being the main one, who's your, you know, arch rival right now. You've got to have defensive linemen that can, you know, rotate in. You've got to build depth. And I think that that's probably something where, you know, they'd love to address that with some of these higher ranked high school kids. But even when they step on campus in the summer and into the fall, there's just no guarantee that they can play immediately at a high level. As a possible JUCO transfer will. But like I said off the top, you know, I trust Browse and his staff when their evaluations. And there's probably a few names that just haven't surfaced yet. But I think that that's where you focus the recruitment on are the two lines. And, you know, they've built what they have now. So you got to have confidence on those guys moving forward. But, you know, receiver and then the offensive line and defensive line, I think that's where all those spots go to.
Yeah, well, one thing that we know about Riles is that he's going to recruit for quarterback, and when it comes to receivers, he's like a kid in a candy shop. You know, he'll never quit trying to find one more receiver. He just never thinks you have enough good receivers. But also, what you're talking about on the lines, you know, they're graduating their entire starting offensive line, and three of their four starting defensive line are graduating, and there's some talk that Billings could go in the draft also. So there's going to be a lot of replacement on those lines for the next year.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take the Baylor name away from it. Just talk about football in general, right? I mean, if you're a coach trying to replace your entire offensive line, I don't care who you are. I mean, that's going to have an effect, right? And it'll be a heck of a coaching job if they can replace all the starters on the offensive line without missing a beat. You know, realistically, I don't know, you know, if it'll drop significantly. But when you talk about guys like a Drango, I mean, they don't grow on trees, right? So hopefully the coaches have gotten some guys in the door that they're developing there in the background. And like I said, you know, the confidence level is high there, but man, anytime you're replacing a bunch of starters like that, it's going to be rough. And, you know, for me, with that offense, I don't worry about that too much. You know, you just got to have the bodies. You got to coach them up. But on the defensive line, you know, I think that's more crucial, especially with what you're trying to defend here in the Big 12. I mean, you can literally have some of the best defensive backs that the conference has seen, but it doesn't mean anything if your defensive line isn't holding the ground and applying some pressure, because then those guys are just going to get winded and run around the entire field because, you know, you've already seen what we face in the Big 12. And, you know, Baylor's really scratched that surface. You know, Texas Tech and Kansas are probably two of the teams that, that you know, Big 12 opponents are least worried about, if you will, based on prior performances and even, you know, what we've seen so far this season. So they're going to get into the thick of it, and we're going to learn some things. But, I mean, right now they're rolling. I would just say that in this conference, defensive line and really cross football, you've got to have guys you can rely on.
Yeah. Now, okay, last question I want to ask you before. Baylor's got their next two games are 11 a.m. kickoffs. Now, with the players playing Friday night and then – you know, normally they have a morning film session on Saturday. Does that make it harder to get guys in to see the games when you get those early kickoffs?
I mean, I would say yes, but these days, I mean, I know you mentioned the Saturday morning film. I mean, if a kid really is, you know, circled that particular game to visit, you know, usually their coaches will excuse them. And I just use location as a big plus for Baylor. I think, you know, that's an obvious. I mean, Waco is literally Central Texas. So if you're talking about a kid from Dallas or a kid from Houston, I mean, you wake up at 6 a.m. and you're there in plenty of time, you know. So, you know, if even that. So I don't think that's a deterrent. Now, official visitors from maybe further away, I just don't know that they exist right now, right, because they do a lot of their stomping and recruiting in Texas. So, you know, I would say no. I mean, nobody likes 11 a.m. games. Fans hate them. I don't think the coaches like them. And honestly, you know, that's where you see some of these teams get tripped up, and you check the scores at halftime, and you're like, wait, what? You know, and you look at it, and you're not sure, you know, what you're looking at. But, I don't worry about those. I think they'll have a few kids. They're probably – they'll probably have a bigger visit weekend for some of their, you know, I don't know, bigger opponents that they host at home. But I just don't know if they have that one marquee game in Waco this year that's going to be the weekend, right? TCU's in Fort Worth. I believe they host Oklahoma, so that'd be good. But we'll see which one is the choice.
I'm thinking Oklahoma, and I'm thinking the last game of the season against Texas. Because, you know, Baylor's always had a thing about Texas, okay, because Texas dominated the rivalry for so long. And Texas now absolutely hates Baylor because Baylor's won four of the last five. So, I think that's going to be the big one. I think that those two games are going to be the ones that you'll really want to see people come in. And if Baylor does what they're supposed to do, that December 5th game could be for the championship.
You know, I have a client, and he's a big Texas fan. And we, you know, obviously me doing this, I leverage that into a lot of my conversations. And, you know, people like it, but we connect once a week, and especially during that rough patch they're having, and then they may continue, we don't know. But, you know, it was a weekly basis of, oh, what's going on? And going into the TCU game, I had told him, look, these guys, you know, they're down and out, but, you know, they're young, and at some point in time, you know, yes, they'll probably lose this game to TCU, but think about it, if you fast forward a month, you know, and these guys gain experience, they've got nothing to lose. You know, odds are they're not making a bowl. Odds are everybody's going to continue doubting them. But it's Texas. They're going to be in the limelight. They're going to have the media attention. And so, you know, at the end of the day, if Charlie Strong is the coach that some people think he is, you know, he'll get these guys on the straight and narrow. And I guess my point in saying that or bringing it up is that, you know, when you're playing a team that's got nothing to lose, you know, that's got to be a little bit intimidating when, you know, you're the team that has everything to lose. Because in this conference, We've seen it before. We've seen Iowa State beat Oklahoma State. We saw Kansas State on their fifth or sixth quarterback almost take out TCU. So, I mean, 11 o'clock games, random games like that, you just never know. But, yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point. I mean, Texas, Oklahoma, really anyone else right now that's not A&M is really looking up to Baylor and TCU, for that matter, when it comes to the recruiting trail. So, yeah, I think they'll have something to prove, and that's even more fuel to that fire. So, again, you know, you look at those games and you know, you just don't know, right? I mean, if Hurd continues to mature and that those youngins continue to mature, you might be getting them at a bad time.
Because, you know, I'm a UT graduate, and I'm telling you right now, they still consider Oklahoma their big rival, but
oh, yeah.
They hate Baylor with the white-hot passion of a thousand suns because they just feel like they're genetically superior to Baylor, and Baylor has absolutely no right to beat them. And that's, I know, you know what it's like to be at a school in a conference with Texas and how the Longhorns can be.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, they're not on the throne anymore, so they're probably getting a taste of their own medicine, and they'll like it. And so, you know, so goes sports, and that's why the title of our website is Rivals. So it all comes full circle.
And welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. We're going to go around the Big 12, and Oklahoma State and Texas are off this week, and Oklahoma State is the luckiest undefeated team in the country. They have just lived by this. Boy, they have they've gotten some good calls, and they really were able at West Virginia to pull one off late, weren't they?
Yeah, you know, obviously they made the plays on the road in Morgantown last week to win, and, you know, I think, you know, sometimes, you know, it kind of reminds you a little bit of what Florida State did last year when they got to the, when they got to, the national semifinals because they were winning all these games by the skin of their feet, skin of their teeth, actually. And obviously time just ran out on them when they got to the national semifinals and got beat by Oregon. But, what do they say? You better to be lucky than good. And, you know, look, the thing, but it isn't a case where Oklahoma State, in my judgment, Stephen, has lucked into this. They found ways to win. And you can't quantify that. And when you find ways to win a football game, whether it's in your building, you know, they got a 2-point stop on Kansas State, and that turns out to be the difference because they go down and kick a field goal. Then they get, you know, they blow a two touchdown lead against West Virginia, but they still make a play in the overtime period to pull that out. That isn't luck of the draw. That's just kids making plays. And what do coaches say? That usually a football game comes down to maybe half a dozen plays. So far, Oklahoma State's been making all they has been on the made the majority of the half a dozen plays.
Yeah, and you know when in that overtime game against West Virginia, that was a pretty gutsy call to go for it on fourth down in overtime. That was an incredibly gutsy call, and it paid off for them. But
yep.
Hey. You know, it works. Okay, now, right now, Texas Tech gets has the second game of their Get Well Tour. They are 4-2, 1-2 in the Big 12, and they are at Kansas. That is 0 and everything. Okay, I'm
yeah.
Taking Tech.
Yeah, I am too, and I think it's probably going to be about as bad as what we saw last week with Baylor. There. It's probably going to be something like maybe 66-14, 66-17 or something like that. You know, Tech, we've talked about the Tech's a better team. They are going to probably get to a bowl this year. You know, they got a good win over Iowa State. They'll win this game. They'll find a way to nab somebody later on this year. And, you know, they'll get bowl eligible, and then they'll start to get things figured out and moving in the right direction for them. And so they'll handle this pretty comfortably. I think Pat Mahomes, who appears to be still not 100% with his knee, but he's still throwing for gobs of yards. What they have, a school record. 750 billion yards against Iowa State last week, or I think it was 776.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they'll just run right over Kansas tomorrow, or on Sunday,
yeah.
On Saturday, rather.
Yeah, and they're 4-2, but, you know, they've also played the number 2 and number 4 team in the country. So, you know, they've been in some pretty heavy company, and, you know, they took TCU to the wire, speaking of teams that find a way to win. And so, you know, I think this Tech team is a lot better. With them sitting at 4-2 right now, they take care of business against Kansas. You know, they're one more for bowl eligible. So, yeah, I think Tech makes a bowl this year, and I think that they're a significantly better team than they were last year. Now, next we have what is kind of a – boy, this is kind of a – I don't know, I guess you'd call it like the kind of disappointed bowl. You've got number 19, Oklahoma, at 4-1 and 1-1 in the Big 12, at Kansas State, that's 3-2 and 0-2 in the Big 12. And when was the last time Kansas State was 0-2 in the Big 12?
Been a while. Yeah, it's you know, there's two things here at play. You see two really well-respected coaches in the industry having some issues with their teams. I mean, to Bill Snyder's credit, the fact that he owned up to the fact that he knows he probably should have gone for it on fourth down instead of kicking the field goal against TCU, I think that speaks to his character, because really it was a horrible decision that he made in that game to do that. And you know, with Bob Stoops, you know, the reason why they got pushed all over the place, you know, Bob, I mean, I've read the comments from Bob and his presser on Monday and talking about that they didn't feel like they were, you know, they were out physical, if that's the right word. You know, they got pushed around by Texas. The fact of the matter is they were. I mean, Bob can say it all he wants. They got pushed. And their other problem is and the thing that came home to roost against Oklahoma, Stephen, is they can't run the ball. They cannot effectively run the football. And I don't know why, when you have two solid running backs and a guy like Samaje Perine, who set the single game rushing record in the NCAA last year for 400 plus, and you've got another talented running back in Joe Mixon, they had 37 carries for 67 yards in that game last week. I don't understand how that team cannot run block suddenly. You can talk about the scheme that Lincoln Riley brought in from East Carolina, but how does your running game completely evaporate? And that's where Oklahoma's problem is right now.
Well, here's kind of what I think. I know I took a photo quite a few years ago before Briles was at Baylor, when Oklahoma was in full stride. And Oklahoma's offensive linemen were all close to a head taller than Baylor's defensive linemen.
Right.
And Oklahoma used to be it looked, when they came off that line, it looked like big red trash cans coming at you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, you know, you own the line, you own the game. And that's just the way it is. And Oklahoma doesn't own the line anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of Kansas State is, I think, the kind of a team that, and it was what was so unusual last week against TCU for Kansas State, run the ball on TCU in the second half when they were throwing so much, you know, try to, you know, shorten the game and, you know, get out of there, because they had a pretty good lead at one point in time. And Snyder didn't do it, but Kansas State tends to be a very fundamentally sound team. I kind of like Kansas State at home. I don't know how Oklahoma's going to bounce back. And so I think I'm going with Kansas State, but I think it's going to be a very close game.
I'm going to go Oklahoma. I just think Kansas State fired its best shot last week against TCU. It didn't work out. I do think Oklahoma has the better personnel. It's a big game for Bob Stoops, too, because in his program, they've got to get back on the beam here. And if they lose this game up there, the whole season could unravel. So this is the turning point in the 2015 season for the Sooners. It could be a pivotal point for Bob's tenure at OU too, as well. I mean, if they pull off another 8-5 or whatever, I think the Sooners, you know, again, I'm putting the cart well before the horse here on this, but I think this is really important to Bob and his tenure at Oklahoma. They've got to win this, Stephen, and I'm going to stick my neck out and go with them on the road, even though, you know, it's been difficult up there. I just don't think Kansas State has enough personnel to stay with them. They gave a great effort, heart, you know, your hat's off to them. But I just don't think they've got enough. I think Kansas State is in borderline bowl team this year anyway.
Okay, I can buy that. And Kansas State is, it's a team that you've generally got a pretty good idea of what they're going to do. It's not like some other teams where they're always throwing rabbits out of their hats and stuff like that. But you got a pretty good idea of what they're going to do. And yeah, Oklahoma probably can out personnel them, but I'm not jumping back off of Kansas State now that I picked them. All right, then we get one that I think we both kind of know what's going to happen. Number three, TCU, 6-0, 3-0 in the Big 12 at Iowa State. That's 3-2 and 1-1 in the Big 12. And Iowa State has already played Kansas, and that's probably their Big 12 win for the year. So I'm going TCU.
TCU big. Let's move on to the next game.
Okay. West Virginia. let's see. Let's go ahead and jump to the national games. And okay, we've got number 7, Michigan State, at number 12, Michigan. And Jim Harbaugh has got that Michigan team doing stuff that most people didn't think they could do. And they haven't given up a score.
Yeah.
And they haven't given up a score. Now, you know, they've got a lot of juniors and seniors on that team, and he got buy-in from them fast. They're really going and I don't know how long Harbaugh, he might stay at Michigan. You know, it's like, I think it was like his dream job. But, you know, Harbaugh wins every place he goes, and then they're always happy to see him leave. So I get the feeling this must not be the nicest guy to be around on a daily basis.
No, but I think he's back in his digs in Michigan, and so he'll always be given the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he's a grinder. He rubs a lot of people the wrong way. It just happens. But I also think, too, that Michigan – this is the battle of the Paul Bunyan axe. By the way, there's two separate battles with the Paul Bunyan axe, trophies, if you will. There's Michigan mm-hmm. State, Minnesota, Wisconsin in this one, just to let you know about trophies and all that. But anyway, I do think, that Michigan State's won 6 of the last 7 in this series. The Spartans have not played very well here as of late. They struggled late, got a break late to hold off Rutgers last week. Michigan's been on a roll now. You could say that this is Michigan's first big test, because I don't think anyone really knew what to expect out of Utah when that opener was played back in September 3rd, whatever that was. And they played extremely, extremely well. And I know that Michigan would love to do nothing more than to beat Sparty. I think ESPN's Game Day is up there this week for that game. But you know what? I think I'm going to go with Connor Cook and the Spartans to win this one. I think that Michigan State isn't – I know Michigan's played really well here. I still have some questions about their quarterback play. But I'm going to go with Connor Cook and Michigan State in this one on the road in the Big House.
Okay, so I'm going Michigan, and you're going Michigan State. And, you know, Michigan State's undefeated, but, boy, they've been pushed a little bit in some of their games. All right, next we go to number 10, Alabama, at number 9, Texas A&M. And this is at Kyle Field, and Kyle Field is a very tough place to play. You know it's going to be sold out. I think it's the biggest stadium in the country now. It'll have over 100,000 people in there. I'm going Crimson Tide, and not just because I hate A&M. I think Alabama's got their loss for the year. I do not think that Saban's ready, because he gets that second loss, and there's no way they're in the playoffs. There's no way. I don't think Saban's ready to relinquish that yet. And I don't think he's going to let A&M be in it, even in Aggie's house.
I think this really comes down to this game is all about Coker at Alabama, their quarterback, Jay Coker. There's been times when he's looked really good. There's been times he's looked incredibly average. There's been times he's looked even worse. And if he plays very well, which he can, but if he doesn't play well, then I think that this, they're in for a long day down there at Kyle Field. With A&M, you know, Kyle Allen's played well. I love the way this defense is reacting under John Chavis. He seems to have brought a personality to them that's really made an impact with them. And I'm going to go with the Aggies in this, Stephen. I just think they're going to find a way to pull this out and win this now down there at Kyle Field. You know, this is probably the best situation for the Aggies that they've been in for a long time. There hasn't been a lot of hype to them, even though now they've risen to number 9, number 10 in the country. But they started off the year kind of, well, they weren't even in the rankings when they started the season. And they've kind of slowly kept up. The defense is playing really well. They've absolutely owned just about everyone that they've played. You know, I thought, I was so impressed with them when they, in their season opener against Arizona State in Houston. And I said, we need to kind of watch these guys. I think they're going to beat the Tide.
Wow. I'm going to be impressed. I would not rule it out, especially at home. And, Kevin, you know how much home field means in college football. I think it's a lot bigger advantage than it is in the pros.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. And then our last national game is number 8, Florida, at number 6, LSU. And I would have really considered this a toss-up, but, okay, Will Grier, the Florida quarterback, has been suspended for the rest of the season. And I'm not sure this is at LSU. I'm just not sure that I want to go into the Bayou country with a quarterback making his first start.
Well, Treon Harris has gotten some time. He's a pretty talented kid. And, you know, the point was made early in the week about the way that this team, you know, found a way to win some tough games at Kentucky and the way they rallied at home to beat Tennessee. With Grier, I thought the way that he played and brought them back and they found a way to pull out those games really kind of spoke to the personality of the team that it was developing. Now under, now under Treon Harris, it's going to be interesting to see how they reacted. I'm going to go to LSU. I mean, look, when you play LSU, down in Florida, it's just, or excuse me, from Florida. When you play LSU down in Baton Rouge, it's always going to be just a really difficult go of it. And Leonard Fournette is just having an incredible season. And I look for him to just continue. I think it's going to be a slugfest. I see LSU probably winning this game something like 21-13, something like that, where every yard that each team collects is going to be earned.
Yeah, I think one of the things with LSU, I think where Florida has a chance is that LSU has – They've got a really good defense, but they've never been able to pull off. Les Miles has never pulled off that much offensive production. He's always been a defensive coach, and that's where I think Florida has a chance on that. But it's kind of hard for me to pick against LSU at LSU. Okay, and this leads us to our last game, and I think we both know who we're picking, West Virginia at Baylor. And I'm going to go with Baylor 54, West Virginia 21. I think West Virginia will get some points, but I don't think they'll get enough points.
I'm going to go Baylor 48-27. And I think it'll be a case where West Virginia will. I think West Virginia's game will kind of look very close to how it went in Norman, where they hung with the Sooners for a half. Probably it took that game into the third quarter, and then I think Baylor pulls away. Who knows? Maybe the Bears just jump all over them right from the start, and West Virginia can't keep up. I could absolutely see that happening, where Baylor just takes them apart and wins this game, something like maybe somewhere in the 60-20 or something like that. I absolutely could see that. But from a standpoint of picking Baylor, I'm going to go 48-27. And they're pushed, but they find a way to take care of business. And we see Shaq Linwood continuing to push for Walter Abercrombie's career rushing record.
Okay, here's what I'm really going to watch with this, because I think Baylor is going to get a lead on them. One of the things that I think Baylor really has been working on this year is once they get up on a team, is closing the game out, because that was what happened against Michigan State. And so if Baylor gets up, what's going to be really interesting, because, you know, last year they had West Virginia just blown off the map, and then West Virginia comes back and scores enough that the game looked a lot closer than it was. But, mm-hmm. you know, when you start picking up like 24 points in the third and fourth quarter to get into the 40s, I don't care if you're trying to close a game out and you've got 70 points, you don't want to be letting somebody score three and four touchdowns on you late in the game. And
no.
So that's going to be what I'm really looking for if Baylor gets an early lead.
Yeah. Yeah. But see, and the thing to keep in mind there too is they have a situation where the lesson to be learned from the Michigan State game was get your running game established. And then when you get control, and if you're fortunate to get control of the football game, that's where you use your running game to grind down the opponent and win the ball game. And that's what they've been doing here so far this year. I think that's the big lesson they took from the Cotton Bowl, is they didn't establish the running game early enough. And so they couldn't rely on it to try and finish off that game last week or last year in the Cotton Bowl. So we'll see.
Okay. And I think that wraps it up for us. And we'll catch you next time on the Sikkim Sportscast.